Okay, Nick should also get a hand just for getting through that entire presentation without saying chick magnet. So that was pretty impressive. So first, I appreciate all of you being out here today. And the work I'm going to talk to you about today is some work I've been involved in the last couple of years. And it's certainly been a collaborative effort between not only my colleagues there at Arkansas, John McCollum, my research technician, and Doug Karcher, but also with Professor Mauro Sarno and Girolamo Mattina, his graduate student from the University of Palermo in Sicily, and then also Drs. John Sorokin and Adam Tomes from the University of Tennessee. Adam is now at Iowa State University. So back in 2013, I had the opportunity to actually do a sabbatical leave in Italy. And so during that six-month period, I spent a lot of time looking at soccer fields, not only in Italy, but really all across Europe and certainly the southern half of Europe. And one of the things that was a common problem in just about every large stadium I went to were shade problems. And it's mainly because of the way the stadiums are now built, comfort for the fans, roofs over the seating usually, and because of that, now they're seeing a lot of shade problems that are affecting the performance of the turf. And certainly all of us have seen this either on social media and other forms, is that the use of supplemental lighting has suddenly become almost commonplace on many of the stadiums in Europe, and they're even making their way now into the United States as well. But as we would visit these stadiums that were dealing with shade problems, the first question that I would always ask was, well, how long do you run the lights, or how long do you need to run the lights? Nobody really knew, because nobody really knew how much light the turf actually needed in order to perform properly. So this kind of led to us starting to ask questions, well, how much light does a Bermuda grass athletic field or an overseeded Bermuda grass athletic field actually need to still be able to perform? So the objectives of the study I'm going to describe today were basically to look at the effects of various shade levels on persistence, quality, and traction of overseeded and non-overseeded Bermuda grass athletic fields, and then hopefully out of that to establish a minimum daily light integral or a daily light load that's needed for both overseeded and non-overseeded Bermuda grass athletic fields. Okay, so the treatment structure looks something like this. We had four levels of shade in this study, from 0% or a full sun environment, 30, 60, and 90% shade, which was induced by shade cloth. I'll show you a picture of that in a minute. So those were our four shade levels. We also had the shade levels split, looking at Riviera Bermuda grass. Am I pointing this in the wrong direction? Right, here we go. Riviera Bermuda grass only, that was not unreseeded, mowed at a mowing height of 2.5 centimeter, and then the other half of that strip was Riviera Bermuda grass that was overseeded with perennial ryegrass. We used a three-way blend from Pennington, also at 2.5 centimeters. The trial was conducted in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We initially overseeded the plots in September of 2013, and then we imposed the shade treatments in April of 2014. We reseeded the plots with perennial ryegrass in the fall of 2014. Just the experimental design was a strip plot design, with our two factors being shade level as well as overseeding. So we had four replicates of each, and so you can see that in this the units that we used, or the materials that we used, we were able to randomize our shade levels or our light levels in each rep, and then we were also able to randomize our overseeding treatments within each of the four replicates. Okay, so this is a system that we developed specifically for this study, and we're now using it on a number of other studies. But basically, this original kind of low frame design that's on wheels was actually developed by John Trappi, who's the next speaker on the program here today. I certainly want to give him credit for that. But in this case, in John's case, he had a single shade level over this entire frame. But in our case, we were actually putting four different shade treatments across each of the replicas. And you can see they're randomized in each of those replicates. And then you can see the overseeded strip here and the non-overseeded strip here. The other thing we did was we mounted a PAR light sensor under each of our shade treatments in two of the reps of the trial. That PAR light sensor was also connected to a battery-operated data logger. And so one of the nice things about this setup is that the light sensor and the data logger, they're all wired into the system, so when you need to move the shade structures in order to mow the turf or collect data, everything moves continuously. Nothing to unplug or disconnect in order to get out there and do what you need to do on the plots. We collected a lot of data. I don't have time to talk about all of it today, but we're going to talk about the daily light intervals that we collected with our different shade measurements. We did turf coverage using image analysis. We did traction measurements using the Tennessee Athletic Field Tester that John Sorokin and his team developed. We also looked at Bermuda grass persistence in overseeded plots and how that was impacted by shade. And I'm going to present basically all the results today based on the highest order interaction from analysis of variance. So they all were done with basically repeated measures analysis, except for the traction measurements. And so the highest order interaction is what I'm going to be presenting. Okay, so first just to look at the DLI measurements that we collected with the sensors over the 2 years of the study. A lot of these graphs are going to be set up this way, so let me just go through that. This is going to be time on the x-axis, and then whatever our response variable is on the y-axis. In this particular case, we're looking at average daily light integral per month, and then the different colored lines represent our full sun line here in the green, and then 30%, 60%, and 90% shade. And so you can see kind of a typical seasonal pattern in terms of daily light integrals, where you get the highest levels of daily light integrals in the midsummer, and then you get some shoulders over here in the spring and the fall. So if we take all of that data and kind of summarize it in one fell swoop here, basically what we found over the 2 years of the study was that we were looking at about an average DLI of about 43.3 moles per day in our full sun, down to 3.5 moles per meter squared per day in the 90% shade. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting that you should be aware of is that if you take this number and multiply it times 0.7, which would be the 30% shade cloth, it actually comes really close to that. So those shade cloths, whatever they're promoting in terms of their percent reduction, it actually is very close to what we actually measured when we went out there and measured it. Okay, so this particular graph is looking at the effects of our overseeding treatments as well as season on turf grass coverage. And again, same way, time on the x-axis, the response variable turf grass coverage on the y-axis. Non-overseeded or Bermuda grass only plots on the top, overseeded plots on the bottom. And so what we can see here is that the best coverage was maintained at full sun with Bermuda grass only. Slight reduction, but generally not significant at 30% of shade, but a significant decline in turf grass coverage as we got to 60% shade, and then almost a complete loss of turf within just a few months when we were at the 90% shade level. When we look at the overseeded plots, which have a more shade-tolerant perennial ryegrass in them, we were maintaining very good turf grass coverage at 0, 30, and 60% shade. But the 90% shade, again, was still too much. Now, one thing I'm going to point out on another slide, and I want to point out here as well, is that as we see, as we got late into the second season of this trial, some of those shade treatments started also really impacting the overseeded plots. And I think this really suggests that we really have to do shade studies over a multi-year period to see those cumulative effects, and that's really what's going on there. These are just some pictures from the plots, 0% shade, 30% shade, 60% shade, and 90% shade, overseeded on the left, non-overseeded on the right. And again, you can see at 30% shade, both the overseeded and non-overseeded are holding up pretty good here. We're starting to see a pretty significant decline in coverage in the non-overseeded plots at 60% shade or 16 moles apart, and then at the 90% shade, pretty much loss of cover in both of the overseeded and the non-overseeded treatments. Okay, traction measurements. Okay, again, we had Dr. Sorokin's Tennessee Athletic Field Tester over a couple of times to do some measurements. This device basically has a foot that you can apply any kind of cleat to. It drives the foot into the turf and then gives a measure of either vertical force on that cleat or horizontal forces, which are more of a measure of traction. And that's what I'm going to present here today. We used one single shoe type in this particular study, which was a very popular molded soccer cleat, the Nike Vapor Talon Elite. But again, one of the nice things about this device is you can look at other shoe types or cleat types. Okay, so again, this is looking at peak horizontal force that, as affected by shade and overseeding. So our shade levels are going across the x-axis here from full sun to 90% shade. The gray bar is non-overseeded. The green bar is overseeded. So a couple of things to point out here about traction. Even at a very slight decrease in shade levels, 30% shade, we see a decrease, a significant decrease in horizontal force or traction in the non-overseeded plots. Similarly, we saw a significant decrease in traction in the overseeded plots as we went from full sun to 30% shade. So even though when we looked at the coverage and quality of those plots, they still looked pretty good, there was a decline in what we would categorize as athletic performance. The other thing that was kind of interesting in this study was the fact that we saw significant declines in traction in the overseeded compared to the non-overseeded plots, especially as we went into more heavily shaded areas. So 30% shade, 60% and 90%, the overseeded plots always had less traction than the non-overseeded. One of the things that we always talk about in the transition zone in the South is the fact that competition from overseeded perennial ryegrass can certainly inhibit Bermudagrass, and over repeated overseedings, Bermudagrass will start to fade. So one of the questions we wanted to answer here was, does shade make this issue worse? And so we did a Bermudagrass presence on a monthly basis using a grid count like you see here in the image. So in 2014, in full sun, our Bermudagrass in the overseeded plots was at about 80% in July, August, and September. But we start seeing a decline a little bit in Bermudagrass persistence at 30%, significant decline at 60%, and then again at 90%, pretty much all the Bermudagrass was gone. The important thing here is that in the second year, both the 90% and the 60% shade basically were completely void of Bermudagrass at this point. So again, that's that cumulative effect again, that the combination of probably winter issues, shade, competition from the ryegrass, the Bermudagrass was pretty much gone. And even in the 30% shade level, we see a significant drop in the amount of Bermudagrass that's there in those plots. Okay, so in conclusions, basically we decided based on our shade levels is that when we got below that 30% shade, which was 28 moles per meter squared per day, we saw a significant decrease in a number of the things that we measured, including coverage, traction, and Bermudagrass persistence. Again, shade effects are cumulative. So shade studies, we really need to be looking at a multi-year study to really determine where those numbers really start to shake themselves out. And the third thing, and it might be the most important thing we learned in this study, is that our former football coach, Houston Nutt, was right. Ryegrass is more slippery than Bermudagrass, okay? So you can take that home and tell it to your constituents, okay? And I don't know if anybody's ever proved that before. Maybe somebody has. So with that, I'll see if there's a question. Frank.
I heard that in Australia, the Australians have a debate between cooch and ryegrass regarding slipperiness. But my question is, so what are those units put out? Those units that were hauling out to do these things on these fields, if you're saying that's an integral for warm season turf, how can we get it with those units? How do they compare?
Okay, that's a good question. So how much are the light systems actually putting out? Now, there may be somebody in here that can answer that better than me, but I've been told by the companies that they can get a mole per hour. Okay, so if you ran it for 24 hours consecutively, you would get 24 moles of par light over the course of the day. So if you're starting at, 10, you're going to need basically to run it 24 hours a day to get to the 32 moles level. If you're starting at 20, you may only need to run it half the day. But ultimately, that's what we hope to be able to tell them is that, and these lights are expensive to run. If you can run it 10 hours and still get the same effect as running it 20 hours, that can have a significant cost savings.
And they've got to figure out something to do other than overseeding because that's the end of the Bermudagrass.
It's gone. I mean, within 2 years, it was gone, even at moderate levels of shading. Yes. Well, we did traction every month using another device called the Canaway. So we've got traction measurements basically monthly over the full 2 years. The Tennessee Athletic Field Tester, we only did one measurement each summer. So that was done in July of the 2 years of the study. So we only got two measurements during the study period with that. Oh, well, we didn't transition the ryegrass with chemicals. So, I mean, the ryegrass is, even in the heat of northwest Arkansas, there's still a lot of ryegrass in there.
But it's not the full
overseed. No, it wouldn't be in the peak period for ryegrass. That's correct.
But, yeah, and the shade especially is something about
one last question.
Yes.
So suppose you have a given number of DLI, which is reduced versus full time. I can think of two ways of achieving that. One is put under shape loss consistently whole time. The other scenario would be put under full time and cover completely, say by a concrete structure. But they have the same value of DLI. Do you see any difference in the physiological responses under those two different scenarios?
Yeah, I don't know. Never done it, so it's a good, it's an interesting question. I think there's lots of ways to adjust the DLI, and I don't think we've done any comparative studies to say is continuous shade, partial shade for half of the day or full shade for half of the day. I don't know that we know that. Maybe somebody else again in here knows more about that than I do.
All right, thank you, Mike.